Welcome to your Supercoach Coach preseason episode number 8. This week I'm joined by Mark or FB Donkey.
G'day everyone.
We've got a big podcast lined up. We've forecasted for a few weeks now that we're going to be looking at the rookies before our final lockout, and as well as the midfield, mid prices and premiums. So we won't go through any more intro. We'll jump straight into it, starting at the back line with the rookies. The first guy we're going to look at is Brandon Ellis from Richmond Football Club. First round draft pick, and to be honest, should be the first backline rookie that you lock into your team.
Well, that's after Bug and Moore, who were quite good on the weekend. Ellis does look like he's got some good scoring ahead of him. First round draft pick, and has played pretty well in the preseason. I think that he's taken some kickouts for Richmond, which is a really good sign on how highly they rate him. I'm picking him with a fair bit of confidence, I think.
Mature body too. And as Mark said, doing the kick-ins. So should be a reasonable scorer. On to another Richmond rookie in the back line, Stephen Morris, who is yet another mature age recruit. He's from the Sandful. Overlooked for a few years. He'd been available as a father-son selection for a while now, but last year had a career-best season and was named in the Sandful Team of the Year, which has seen him drafted. His key attributes as a player would probably be his pace and ability to read the play, so that sees him a pretty good defensive player. He plays on all sizes, so from a job security point of view, it's good to have a player like that. And he should be a decent scorer considering he has the body for AFL football. He does possess the speed to rebound. The major issue with his selection is probably just the fact that, as is the case with most players that have been overlooked in drafts, that his kicking efficiency probably isn't quite up to scratch. But he's acknowledged that himself, and he's hoping that'll improve under the tutelage of AFL coaches. So hopefully we see some improvement in that area.
Yep, I agree with all that, Marcus. If I had any concerns over him, it probably would be the job security. And he doesn't really have a really high scoring ceiling, but if you can lock down a spot in that Richmond team, he'll serve you pretty well for your Supercoach team this year. The next player we're going to look at is Bauman from Hawthorn. He's basically been playing fullback over the preseason. My concern with Bauman is that Hawthorn have a really full list at the moment and not a lot of injuries. I know Gillam's still listed as a test for round one, but they've probably got 30 players that could easily be best 22, and they've got a few key position backmen with Stratton, Gibson, and Schoenmakers, and Gillam. So where Bauman fits into that, I'm not sure. I know he's a mature age player, had a good year last year. I personally think that he's going to get squeezed out early on, but I know that a lot of good Hawthorn people that think he'll get games. So what do you think, Marcus?
Like you said, the job security is probably the biggest issue, but it's interesting that, and have you heard talk that from Hawthorn supporters that Suckling might even be a fringe player for Hawthorn this
year? I have heard that. And what that suggests to me really is that Hawthorn have suggests how deep they're batting at the moment. And they have got a lot of players to choose from. Bauman did score 86 and 77 in his first two NAB games.
I think a lot of Hawk supporters are saying that as long as he plays decently, once he's named, it's obviously a show of confidence, and that they'd expect he'd stay in the side, or at least early on, considering his attributes as a player. He is ready for AFL, just he's playing in a really deep list, like Mark said. So probably look out for team lists, but to be honest, I'm preferring Ellis and Morris at this stage, and considering a lot of people have already loaded up on GWS rookies as well as Clark and or Bauer, he might not be your man.
So you'd take Bauer over Bauman if you had the money?
I would, just because I think Bauer, having played AFL before, having had a reasonable scoring history before, is worth the 40k extra.
Okay. Next player we want to look at is from Collingwood, and that's Peter Yagmore. I think Collingwood have got quite a few injuries going into round one. I heard that they might be missing 8 of their best 22, so that is going to open some spots for some of these younger guys to come in and play. Yagmore's had a pretty decent preseason. He doesn't look like a really huge scorer, but is fighting for a role off half back. If Maxwell doesn't play, I think there's a fair chance that Yagmore will get named this week. What do you think of him for a pick?
Yeah, well, I guess he really comes into consideration because of the injury problems that they've been having. And I guess considering the structure that a team like Collingwood already have in place, considering their recent success, that he should fit in, and as long as he plays well, you'd think that that convert into pretty reasonable scoring. And we tend to see that from rookies who feed into quality sides. So in terms of scoring potential, it's probably there. In terms of early job security, it's probably there. So I don't mind him too much as a selection, but I do prefer Ellis, Morris and Bowman, who all seem to have more mature bodies, and we've seen what that can do for scoring. And they all also have pretty decent job security, if not all better than Yagmore.
So I'm interested in the next player we've got on our running sheet here, Marcus, and that's Smets. Now, as a Geelong supporter, do you think he's best 22?
I think he will filter in and out of the side. If he has and we got to remember with Smets that his last season was injury interrupted and he hasn't played football for quite a while now. So once he gets a sustained run at it, you'd hope that he's going to hit some form, because at the moment, although his training form is really good and that's why he's been talked up so much, he's not quite converting that when he's out on the park. So I'm thinking he'll get his opportunities and hopefully that'll translate into him turning into a best 22 player. But I guess I sort of see him similarly to how Duncan performed for us in the first year, and that he's going to have a reasonably extended run, but that's mainly due to, you know, injuries or rotations that he's in the side. And I think Geelong are going to continue resting heavily this year considering the age profile of our list. So I do see Smets getting a lot of games, but maybe not consistently in our best 22. So I'm talking probably around 15 games seems like a reasonable guess.
Well, I think that's what Stevie J suggested a couple of weeks ago in an interview. Yeah, I guess he'd also be a bit of a sub-best candidate as well.
Yeah, and that would be unfortunate for his scoring. So I think in the NAB Cup, he scored 44 and 35 Supercoach points. So from that perspective, maybe not looking as great as some of the others. I don't think we mentioned Ellis or Morris's scoring previously, but they fared a lot better, with Ellis registering 63-80 at 54, Morris registering 60 and 72 in his two games.
All right, we may as well move to the midfielders then. The first player we want to look at is the only player that I see this year that could become the next Michael Barlow, and that is Magna from Melbourne. Had a really great season last year in the VFL, recruited to Melbourne, started off firing in the early NAB game, scored 104 in his first full NAB game. He seems like the sort of player to me that could average of, well, 80 plus you'd be really happy with from a rookie, but he could average 90 plus. I know he dislocated his finger, so he's missed a couple of weeks of footy, but I think that shouldn't affect him too much. He would have been able to maintain his fitness in that time, and within a week or two, I'm pretty sure he is a lock in Melbourne's best 22. Do you think he has great scoring potential and is also a lock in their 22?
I think he probably has the greatest scoring potential of all the rookies that we're going to look at today, but 80 to 90 seems fairly high, probably just a rung below that. Probably 70 to 80 is what I see him doing, because you've got to be a really quality player to register those scores in your first AFL season, even though he is a mature recruit. I think he should be probably picked in every single side, even if he's not listed in round one, with the assumption, like you said, Mark, he is a lock for their best 22, that he'll come back next week. Although I think we're hearing that he will, in fact, be listed this week.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing as well, mate. There might be a loophole this week. Say you had Kennedy or McDonald on your bench and you had the emergency on them. If you pick a player this week that's not actually playing, a rookie, and put him in your midfield, then you couldn't put that score onto your field. That seems like a pretty risky strategy to me. But if you were going to do it, then the player to do it with would likely be Lachie Neal. Seems unlikely to be picked this week just because he did pick up, I think it was an ankle injury about 3 or 4 weeks ago, which stopped him from playing any more games. Do you think he'd be worth the risk if you had that sort of situation, Marcus?
He was probably as hyped as Magna was early in the preseason, so I'm probably of the same view that you're taking, Mark, that it's probably too risky to sort of take on, especially with the amount of options that we have in the midfield this year.
And with McDonald going down or being suspended for 2 weeks, you really don't want two people on your bench that aren't playing, so that would be quite a risk, I would have thought.
His two NAB Cup scores have been 52 and 28 SC, although that probably doesn't quite reflect how well he's been playing. I think Ross Lyon pumped him up in the very first game in the lightning round stage after a strong intra-club match. And throughout the preseason, he's been talked up by Lyon. And I think he even said that he would have been in the round one team had he not been injured. So he has shown quite a lot. He's got a good attack on the football, which is what we want to see from a rookie. And come from nowhere, really. He was a smoky pick, drafted quite low down in the draft. So kudos to him.
I think a lot of people thought he might be the next Nathan Fyfe. I think he might get the sub best early on. So, yeah, I'd put a line through him at the moment, and hopefully he actually misses 3 or 4 weeks and we can downgrade to him at some point. The next player we want to look at is from the Saints, and this is someone that I rate fairly highly, and that is Thomas Ledger. He had 41 in NAB 3, but managed to push it at 90 in NAB 4. He was the sub for that game, but came on for Lenny Hayes when Hayes got knocked out really early. So points per minute in that game is quite a great statistic. So he seems like one of the midfield rookies that could score quite highly if he's manages to get some game time. I think the expectation is a little bit that Waters will probably play a few more of the young kids because the Saints just don't have many coming through. So they're going to need to get some game time into him. So if he can avoid the sub vest, he seems like he'll be quite a decent scorer. I know we went to NAB 1, Marcus, and we noticed him. He's probably looked a little bit undersized, but he did look quite good on that night as well.
Yeah, I'm a bit confused. As you said, Mark, considering the amount of rookies St Kilda will be bleeding this year, or young players at least, I'm interested if you know why the talk is that Ledger will be the one that gets that sub vest, because I'd imagine that they'd be playing quite a few new young blokes. Why is he the main one getting that sub vest talk?
I guess because he was sub in NAB 4, which St Kilda taking in a pretty strong side. Do you think that was a reasonable indication about what's going to happen or what they expected to happen? But then maybe because he did so well when he came on, he sort of outgrew that.
Yeah, and he did finish with 90 SC in that last game. So
he did.
On to Clay Smith from the Western Bulldogs, drafted in the first round. He's a strong inside contested player. The only issue, I guess, is considering Western Bulldogs midfield depth. They've got a lot of young kids coming through there, Wallace and Liberatore that we saw last year. How do you feel about his job security, Mark?
I think he should play some games. Probably again with him and a lot of these players, there's a chance he'll become the sub. But I think his disposal efficiency is what would keep me away from him. His dream team to Supercoach ratio a lot of the times was really, really poor, and I don't think he scored over 60 in the NAB. So a definite no from me at this stage, unless you're sort of looking at playing 6 rookie mids or something like that.
And I guess that's the problem when you're underneath the pack all the time and you always got pressure on you, is that it's hard to get that disposal efficiency up that can damage us in Supercoach, especially when you're not really getting that many touches a game as a rookie. So probably agree with you there, although he might sporadically do well because he is quite a bulb magnet. So when he does get a bit of it, he might end up notching up some decent scores.
Sure. So the next player we're going to look at is Kobe Stevens from West Coast. Now, I think this is his third year. He sort of has suffered from injury in the past, but he's had his first really strong preseason. So a lot of people were expecting him to break out this year. Priced at 135, he is a little bit more expensive than most rookies. West Coast have picked up some injuries in recent times with Lacroix and Nikoski going down. So there are actually a couple of spots in the West Coast team for him. Although even saying that, there is still a lot of competition for his spot with people like Tom Swift and co. My concern with Stevens is I think he should be a pretty decent pick. If he can avoid the sub vest, I think he has the potential to score quite well. But with Nikoski and Lacroix going down, they're both small forward roles, and Stevens isn't really a natural small forward. But from what I saw in the NAB, they sort of used him in those roles because they need someone to fill them. So I think he might spend a little bit more time in those roles, which aren't quite as lucrative for fantasy scores as a pure midfield role would be. Like I said, he was in my early draft teams and he was in them for quite a long time, but I've just sort of made other choices recently. I think he could probably still have quite a good year though.
You'd like to hear, especially because he's carrying a slightly inflated price tag, that he's quite firmly in their best 22. The fact that there's still a few question marks on that probably has me backing off a bit, because, like you said, the list is fairly deep in that area. And if you haven't even consolidated a spot at the start of the season, whether you can actually hold that throughout the season, even if you do break in through the round one team, is highly questionable. So I'm holding off on, although I also agree with you, Mark, that he could very well still have quite a strong season. Now, Chad Wingard's the last midfield rookie that we're going to look at for now. He's obviously priced at a premium, having been drafted at selection number 6 last year. Although he was touted to be, you know, a classy player, a high fantasy scorer for our purposes in his first season, that there have been question marks emerging over his size and his stamina and endurance, and whether he'll, given the sub vest quite a lot this year, and I think a lot of people are likening him to Gaff of last year in terms of how he'll be played potentially for Port Adelaide this season.
That's quite possible. I think people think, oh, Port Adelaide are a crap side. They've got plenty of spot in their 22 for someone like Wingard to just play every game. But Port Adelaide's actually had a pretty decent preseason. Their list, I think, is fairly fit, and they do have a decent amount of good players in their best 21. So it's not as if Wingard's just going to walk up start every single week. I think they will get a fair bit of game time into him. But at 171,000, I'd prefer to take the cheaper options personally. Do you have Ledger, Magna and Smith ahead of him?
I would have all three ahead of him, yeah.
Okay, so in that sense, you just get a bit more reward, return on your investment if you're picking those cheaper price ones. But I think that he could turn out to be a decent pick and score okay for people as well. So we are discussing him because he probably is a decent selection, but maybe we just suggest that there are better ones out there.
All right, on to the mid-forward DPPs now. We'll start off with another Melbourne rookie in Tom Couch. He's priced at 94,700, that basement price rookie spot, and he needs to be upgraded to play. I don't think he has been, but am I right in saying they still have another spot left?
Yeah, I think they might even have a couple of spots, and I do think there's a very strong chance he'll be upgraded this week.
Yeah, talking to Melbourne supporters, they do seem quite adamant that both Couch and Magna can play in their best 22 every week, and that is something that I've been concerned about and have voiced my concern to my friends that are Melbourne supporters. And that was the feedback I got, so I guess take their predictions more seriously than an outsider's point of view, which is mine, I guess.
I've spoken to some pretty keen Melbourne supporters as well, and they've basically expressed the same thing, so I think that on the weekend he played VFL reserves and picked up 26 touches, which is a really good sign. His mature age, scored 79 in the first NAB game, so has decent scoring potential, but then was subbed for the next 2 weeks and scored 20 and 16. I personally think there's probably better options out there just because there are so many doubts over his job security, but I quite like him as a player and could understand why someone would pick him, especially with the MPP.
GWS and Sydney rookies are already locked away, so if you're looking for that last-minute mid-forward MPP link, you'd be looking at Couch, Kerridge, or Pfeiffer. So I think Couch probably, to me, looks like the best if he gets games, but if not, it'd probably have to be Darren Pfeiffer. Would you agree with that, Mark? Because his job security is quite strong down at Port Adelaide, and despite not being quite the scorer we were hoping for a third-time listed AFL player, he has done enough to suggest that he's worthy of selection in our teams.
Yeah, I actually think Pfeiffer has, I was impressed by his scoring, 72 and 75 in the two full games that he played, number 3 in the rookie draft last year after dominating the SA NFL last year. I don't think that he's just below AFL quality, so I don't think he's going to star this year or anything like that, but Port Adelaide probably do need that bigger, stronger body. He's been playing down back and in the midfield. I think there will generally be a role for him. I like the fact that he's mature age, he's got AFL experience. I did actually pick him a few years ago when he played for Carlton, and I think he was serviceable, had a few 60s early before getting dropped and had to be traded out a bit below price. So hopefully that doesn't happen again, but out of the MPP rookies left, I think Pfeiffer would probably be my pick, even though, as much as I hate to say that, because I'm not like really rating him as a player.
Now, the last of the three would be Sam Kerridge from Adelaide. He probably has the iffiest job security of the three of them, but when Sandford clubs do their draft of AFL players to their side, apparently they were told that he'd be playing a bit of games. So has he dropped down the pecking order a bit at Adelaide since the preseason has started?
He has shown a few really nice things in the preseason, and I think he actually will get a few games this year, but he's just waiting for some of those injuries to happen, and they will happen at some stage to Adelaide. They've got a really, really full list at the moment, very few injuries, so I think that he's probably going to be kept out by more seasoned campaigners at this stage. I was a little bit disappointed in how much he actually did score in the games that he did play over the NAB, so maybe hopefully he'll be a good downgrade target if he can stay out of the side early on, because I think he's a decent player and has shown some pretty good signs from what we've seen so far.
And you would have thought that he'd done better than the 29, 47, and 27 that he served up, because he does have an AFL-ready body. Surprising to see him only produce those scores.
Sure.
Yeah,
So let's move into the forward line.
we've got a lot of players to look at from St Kilda. Cripps, Saad, Milera. Who do you
We
like
do have a
most of the
few.
three?
Out of the three, well, Cripps comes in. I think he's probably the most reliable in terms of job security. Probably also has the best scoring potential out of those three, but he's priced at 162,000. Only scores of 56 and 51 in the NAB so far. He will probably get quite a few games, I think, playing off half back for St Kilda. He does look a little bit undersized still. His body quite kind of isn't strong enough to go into the packs very hard. Out of the three, though, I think he's the best pick, just because I think Malira could well be a sub. I think he'll be quite in and out of the team, and Saad doesn't seem to have the greatest scoring capacity. Is that right?
Yeah, well, I'm just not a fan of Saad or Milera because of their scoring capacity, and that's just because of the position that they're playing in. They're going to be playing a small forward role, and like you said, might even be candidates for the sub vest. And then you add to that that most people are tipping St Kilda for a slide this year. So,
Slide.
yeah, where does that leave you as a small forward playing for a team on the slide
That's
as
right.
a
That
first year
probably,
player?
for Cripps though, it probably leaves you in a pretty good spot at running off halfback.
Yeah, it does. But is he worth that extra price tag?
And no, I think there's probably enough options still out there. We're going to cover them. Players like maybe Hall, Dixon, some of the MPPs like the Couch and Pfeiffer sort of players.
How do you like Garrick Whedon then from West Coast Eagles? Like you said, they've had a few injuries, and he's plays the position, so he's primed to sort of slip into an injured player's slot.
Sure, I still think there's a bit of competition for that spot from other players, and I'm not sure Whedon's guaranteed to be ahead of them all, even though there have been some injuries. High score of 49 from the three NAB games, that's probably enough for me with the suspect job security to just let him go by. Might put in a really big performance every so often by kicking a few goals, but I don't think he's really going to hurt me by leaving him out.
How about Aaron Hall from the Gold Coast?
I know after his first game in the wet against Melbourne and the Suns, I think it was, that he scored about 70 odd points in that game, and a lot of people thought he was going to be an absolute lock for the preseason. But then he did do a bit of a hamstring and didn't play again until the last NAB game. Scored 44 in that game. He is a mature age player. I think that we should play most weeks for Gold Coast. I don't think a small forward for Gold Coast is going to be all that great scoring position, but I think he'll be pretty reliable. I think there are a lot worse picks out there. Probably won't be taking him myself. I'm not hesitating to recommend him to other people though.
Where do you have Couch in relation to the mid-forward rookies that we talked about in Couch, Kerridge, and Pfeiffer?
In regards to Hall,
Yeah.
probably Pfeiffer ahead, Couch would be even, and Kerridge would be behind.
Okay.
What about yourself?
I would probably have, well, dependent on how much you need that MPP, but I'd probably have all of them ahead of Hall, just
Oh,
because
wow.
I'm probably a bit more suspect on Hall's job security than you are.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if he'll play every week. I think he might only play half the games, and so if you consider that those three other blokes, or two of them, Couch and Kerridge, are in a similar position, but at least have MPP, that I'd probably lean towards them.
Interesting. Brings us to the next player we're looking at, though, and this is someone that I actually rate quite highly, and that is Tory Dixon from the Bulldogs. Recruited from Bendigo Bombers. I did watch him in a few games last year being a Bombers fan, and I think he kicked 50 plus goals for the season. So he's a quality finisher, mature age, playing for the Bulldogs who don't have Hall anymore. So I think that there is a spot for him in the team. He played most of the NAB Cup games. I know McCartney has come from the Bombers and obviously saw a lot in Dixon when he was at the Bombers and has brought him across. So I actually think Dixon is one of the better forward picks going around this year.
Honestly, that's quite surprising from where we were at the start of the season, where Tory Dixon's name was only a whisper, to 52, 60, and 78 for his position. I mean, it is only the NAB Cup, but it is quite encouraging, and I will probably be taking him into season 2012 as it stands.
Yep, and I think that'd be a pretty good idea. But he's not in my side at the moment, but if I had space for him, he would be probably next on the list.
So you like him the most out of the six forward options that we talked about then?
I do, but I still probably have Pfeiffer ahead of him.
Sure.
Not quite sure why, maybe just the MPP.
That will serve to be pretty useful throughout the year, so more than a legitimate reason. Now, I think that wraps up talking about the rookies. Shall we go through and maybe list our two favourite from each line, Mark?
For the rookies, absolutely, mate. For defenders, I'd go Moore and Bug, but we can't put them into our sides anymore. So, Allison Morris for me.
I'd have to concur with you with Allison Morris there. And in the midfield, I'd have Magna and probably Ledger.
I'm the same, mate. Ledger and Stevens would probably be pretty even, but I'd take Ledger because I saved 30 grand.
Yep. And in the forward line is where, like Mark said, you'd probably slot in Pfeiffer ahead of all of them. So I'd have the same Pfeiffer Dixon for mine.
Same for me, mate, but I really hate having to talk up Pfeiffer on this podcast. And if he fails, don't blame me because I don't rate him at all.
Okay. All right. So I think we seem to be quite in consensus there. So it should be quite helpful for any of you on the fence. Not too much fence sitting from us. So we'll move straight on to the midfield, mid-price and premiums now. Although we won't actually be looking at any midfield mid-prices just because of one, time restraints, and two, the fact that Mark and I aren't really big fans at all of playing mid-prices in your midfield.
Been there, done that. It's so unlikely to work out. Just don't bother. Guns and rookies in the midfield all the way.
Yeah. And I mean, even if you take, you know, the different type of mid-prices, the cheap mid-prices, the 200,000 mid-prices, and you know, I've even played with, I think, Ball a couple of years ago, who was an expensive mid-pricer. Just, it never quite works out. So, yeah, I got to agree. Go with the absolute guns.
Even Cochin last year was like an underpriced, it was like a high-priced mid-pricer in the midfield. And I took him, and he had a really good season and he broke out. But even then, he wasn't like a great pick because he didn't sort of reach the top end of midfield premiums. And so always just felt held back that little bit. I know some really top teams did have Cochin, but I still think that you're better off just going premiums or rookies. If you're going to pick a mid-pricer, Hayes probably isn't a horrible pick, but yeah, like I say, I'll just be talking about maybe he is because he's in his 30s and he plays for the Saints.
Yeah.
First player we're going to talk about is Gary Ablett, lock, absolute lock. Last year, he dominated the AFL off barely having a preseason. This year, apparently, he's had a brilliant preseason. I would not pick any team this year without Gary Ablett in it.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he needs any discussion. So we'll move right along to not the next player in line, but maybe the next most locked player, Joel Selwood. Would you agree with that? In the midfield,
yeah,
at least?
Yeah, I think you're probably right, just because he does play for what should be a top four or five team. He's a little bit underpriced because he got knocked out, was it in round two or three, or round one last year,
He
scored sort of 10 points, and it's led to him being that bit underpriced.
He was suspended for 3 or 4 rounds, and when he came back, he had to get back into a bit of form, so there was a bit of a drop-off there as well. The fact that he probably still has improvement left in him.
Absolutely, he does. He's still young. He could easily average 120, so at 600,000, I think you're getting a pretty good deal for there. And most teams that I've seen do have Selwood. There are some risks. He could get injured just given the way that he plays. He doesn't have the greatest tribunal record after last year, so could get suspended. And if you don't pick him and he goes down in the first 2 weeks, you're going to get a huge leg up on the rest of the field. But if he does get going, you're just going to be a fair way behind, I think.
If you have a player of his caliber, with the knowledge that he's likely to improve on last year's average, that there's no reason that you'd pass him up. And I think that sentiment is echoed across the fantasy landscape. I don't think I've seen a single team with a knowledgeable coach omitting Joel Selwood.
Okay, or Ablett. Which means if you're running two premium midfield, you can turn off this podcast now. But if you're running 3 or 4, then you probably want to listen up because we've got a few more picks to go through. The next one is Scotty Pendlebury at 700,000. And it's interesting. I think he's pretty much the same age as Selwood, isn't he? So yep. There's a good chance he'd still see improvement from Pendlebury, which is really scary because he averaged 129 last year, I think. He just has so much time with the ball. He reminds me of Hurdy a little bit like that in his ability to just be around a whole bunch of players, but just slow time down and move in slow motion and hit a target perfectly. There's a lot to like about Pendlebury. He's a I know sometimes last year you sort of you don't notice him get the ball a lot, but every time he gets it, he does something super, super effective and will kick an inside 50 to another player or something and just score a lot of Supercoach points. He is the perfect Supercoach player. The only doubt on him would have to be the 700,000 thing.
There's a pretty big chunk of change to put out for your midfielder, especially if you're already locking away Gary Ablett and Joel Selwood. So can you afford to do that, Mark? Can you afford to tie up that much change in three positions of the ground?
If he's going to average 130 plus, then I think that you absolutely can. If he's going to go down a little bit, because and probably the only way he goes down is if he gets tagged more this year, which there is a chance that that'll happen with Swan maybe not being quite the dominant player that he has been. That's the only way I could see him coming down, really. It is an awful lot of money, but when it comes to midfielders, you really do want the best of the best if you can, because some of the players we've got on the list tonight might only average 115, but if Pendles is averaging 130, that's 15 points a week that you're gaining with him. And also, what happens if Ablett gets injured or something? You do want an extra captaincy option there.
What an interesting question for you, Mark. I know a lot of people are probably tossing up between the Scott Pendlebury, who's, you know, that 700,000 and probably looking at 125 plus against a player maybe like Watson or Griffin before he got injured or Hodge, priced at around 105 to 110, but people are tipping, you know, and obviously relatively expectantly that they'd move up to that 115 to 120, so probably likely to have 10 points per game improvement in them. Now, sure. Do you pay, you know, like that 550, 570,000 for a player that's going to jump in 10 points but maybe only get to 115, 120, or do you pay that 130,000 more for Scott Pendlebury, who's going to go 130 plus to start the season? And I think there may not be a definitive answer, because I think that's something that I see quite a lot of variance in from team to team.
Sure, and I think you're probably right. There is no definitive answer there, and I think we would probably have different opinions here. The fact that you've raised the question, I think your selection history sort of leans towards more the value players. So yep. I really like some of the value players. I think some of the players we're going to talk about do have a lot of value in them, and the fact that Ablett and Selwood are sort of locked in is a little bit frustrating, because I'd like to take a punt on some of these other players. Yeah, I personally, I think Pendlebury could be out of reach forever. Like, I think he's way more likely to drop in price, but it's really hard to be buying many players over 600,000. And so say in 7 or 8 weeks, you're like, yep, sweet, Pendles has dropped 60,000. I'm ready to trade him in. It's still going to be really, really difficult for you to get the money in order to do that. So,
especially if we don't have a Michael Barlow type this year, which it looks like we won't.
Yeah, that's for sure. So you might end up using two of your cash cows just to get the money for Pendlebury, which seems like probably you're paying a bit overs for him. So in that sense, he could get away from the field and you might not be able to catch up. But then again, he could have a low game or get injured or not have the super start that some of us are expecting and get down to about 600,000 or under, where you're picking him up really cheap. So I think you can look at it either way. And that's probably for each individual coach to make their own mind up on.
Now, Dane Swan has been fantasy jet for a couple, well, 3 seasons now. And I guess with the emergence of Scotty Pendlebury and considering Ablett and Selwood are already locked, Swan looks to be completely discounted. Is that fair, Mark? Is he an option over Scotty Pendlebury? Because that's probably what you're looking at.
Sure. Yeah, look, I think he is. What he's missed, one game in like 5 years or something, averaged over 120 the last 3 years in a row. There is talk that he's going to have an extra week off to go to Arizona in the middle of the year. I'm not sure whether that's absolutely been locked in or not. So you might have to consider the fact that round 13 or round 11, he might not be there, which is a buy round, which is probably a bit tricky. But then again, he's probably a bit underpriced as well, and he could get off to an absolute flyer. My concern with Swan, and maybe I'm being silly here, is that he just has looked so disinterested over the preseason and hasn't scored any points, so hasn't given anyone a reason to pick him so far. Is that just preseason form and I shouldn't worry about it, or what do you think?
Yeah, I'd probably say so, but considering that last year he clearly enjoyed peaking toward the end of the season, that might be a worry, and that's fair enough too, but from a fantasy point of view, you don't really want players that are aiming to peak toward at the end of the season. I think he's more likely to drop in price than Scott Pendlebury, and if he drops to under 600,000 or under 550, that'll be a really good thing to have available to you.
So maybe post-buy.
Now, on to Nick Dalsanto from St Kilda. hasn't been getting quite a lot of attention, but last year really came home strong. And I think at one stage he was averaging something ludicrous, like 135 over 8 rounds or something.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, so how do you feel about his prospects? Do you think he can replicate that in a St. Kilda side that is tipped to slide, or?
No. That's all I got. I know some really good coaches that are considering Del Sando really strongly. He's about the same age as Swan, sort of 28, still well within his prime, could really do some good things this year. Highest average ever of 123. You're playing quite a lot for him. I think maybe you hope to pick him up cheaper at some stage, although the Saints do start off the season with a pretty good strength of schedule. So I would guess that's an argument for him. But with the Saints sliding, I just wouldn't be my expectation that the Saints are going to slide, I just wouldn't be taking it. Any of their premiums, really, maybe Goddard, and that's it.
Inconsistency as well has been, you know, a feature of his game. I think he tends to be one of those players that at some stage of the season you see slide to, you know, quite a bit below his what he's priced at now. So in terms of keeping as many options that could potentially drop in price to be more attainable for you as the season progresses, Nick Del Santo is one of those players. On to Mark Murphy, who's definitely not one of those players, one of the most consistent Supercoach scorers, or fantasy scorers, that we have available in the game. I know he's in heavy consideration as well, and probably competing with Scotty Pendlebury for a lot of people.
Sure, and he had the round 13 bye, which I find maybe just a little bit awkward, because that shares it with Ablett, so you certainly wouldn't want more than two players from that bye round. Improved his average to 118 last year, super durable, playing for an improving side, one of my favourite players in the AFL. There's so much to like about Murphy. This might be one of the first years in a while that I've gone into the season without him, though. There's just other players that I'm quite interested in, but I'm hoping maybe he gets off to a slow start and I can pick him up or something like that, because unless people start double-teaming him, Murphy he has an ability to outrun opponents, and even if he gets tagged, in the last third of the game, he'll score more points than he did in the first half of the game, and just outrun them. Like, he's a jet, and super coach efficient. One of the main players that has the potential to go up to Pendle's level this year.
Well, that's pretty much the exact reason I like him, Mark. It's the point that you mentioned about his ability to run out the game, and even if they're winning by, you know, 10 goals or losing by 10 goals, Murphy continues to run out the game and give his all. And that's what's seen him save a lot of probably poor first halves, as you've brought up, Mark. So that's probably my favourite part about his selection. But probably my least favourite is the fact that he doesn't seem to quite be able to tip that 140-plus scale as some of the other players are able to. He does score 120-plus, 130-plus fairly often, but as for those really huge games where he completely dominates the Supercoach scoring, you don't quite see that as you do with, you know, the Swans, and who can do 180, Pendlebury, who can do the same, Del Santo, who can do the same. Don't quite
maybe
see
this
that
is the moment. Year that we find that out.
Yeah, and if he does, he'll be, you know, like you said, in that Pendlebury range. So, yeah, a very good gamble to take, but like Mark said, we'll probably be squeezed out just because of the number of options we have. And a similarly good option would probably be Tom Rockliffe of the Brisbane Lions. And like Murphy, he's definitely set to improve again in 2012. Whether that translates into more Supercoach scoring, still a bit of an unknown considering how well he's already doing. Playing for a pretty weak team, currently still in the developmental stage, the Brisbane Lions, but didn't seem to affect his Supercoach scoring last year, and he did it with Redden as well. So,
yeah, we averaged 28 touches last year, 113 in Supercoach. No reason why he can't add another 5 or so to that average. He looks to be a decent Supercoach pick. I know some people have him as a fairly unique pick, and I think he'll remain that, even though we're talking about him here. Has that upside that you weren't talking about, that you were saying Murphy didn't have. He has those 170-plus games in him, which can be quite handy. Yeah, decent pick. He's the sort of player that if you really, really like him, you'll pick him. But personally, I think there's probably some better options.
One of those options I probably feel is Andrew Swallow from North Melbourne Football Club, newly appointed captain, and there's no reason he can't improve again. I think consistency, even though he is a relatively consistent player, consistency in Supercoach scoring hasn't quite been his forte. He doesn't necessarily hit 100 every week. I know there was quite a few last year where he didn't hit the ton. So if he can increase his minimum score and take most of his games to 100 plus, then Andrew Swallow could very well average 115, 120 plus. And North Melbourne have a very good draw. They play Port Adelaide, Gold Coast and Greater Western Sydney each twice, and they play last year's top four only once each, I think. So.
Yep, the strength of schedule is definitely the thing that makes him a decent pick. Becoming captain this year, I know we had Impromptu on the show last year, and Impromptu said he looks for the captains to pick his sides. So you could easily see Swallow going up by as much as 10 points in Supercoach to 120, which if you picked him from the start, that'd be a huge advantage for you. I think personally, he's the round 11 bye, so I'm hoping he has an average game leading up to the bye and I can pick him up for about the current price he is now for the run home, because North Melbourne have a really good second half of the season.
I want to emphasize that I think it's a fallacy that comes up with Swallow that people don't seem to rate his skill and talent and ability quite the same as they do with the other starts midfielders of the competition. And I think partly because he plays for North Melbourne Football Club.
Absolutely.
Quite a vanilla club, because, like I said, when you look at his base, his scoring history from last year, there's definitely scope for improvement. He just needs to pick up that consistency. He's an absolute jet. So good point of difference, considering that he's not the flavour of the month. Now, Dale Thomas from Collingwood Football Club is probably the exact opposite of that, has received publicity all through his career. And last year really emerged as a strong midfield option. And I think I mentioned previously in the podcast that he reminds me of Ablett when I look at him transitioning from a small forward to the midfield, and even how he goes about it with around the ground. He's always at a contest and always providing a good option. He's a skillful player, good overhead mark for his size. And last year, I think he averaged 140 for about a month before getting pinged by, I think, injury or suspension or something, and then maybe dropping off a bit. I know, Mark, you were very hot on his selection early on. Have you cooled, or are you still on the Dale Thomas wagon?
Yeah, I'm not sure whether he'll end up in my team, Marcus, just because there is so much competition with the midfielders. But I'm a huge rap for Dale Thomas this year. I think he can probably pinch some of Swanee's points, pinch some extra midfield points for the Pies. He went 74 to 94 to 109 with his average. Could easily go up another 10 points, which means he will turn out to be an excellent pick. If he plays 22 this year, I think that you'd be pretty happy about picking him. He's added an extra 1.5 kilos to his frame, and he just looks so fit. So probably the knock on him would be that he does do a lot of defensive running. Now, you want a player like that in your team, but whether that's good or not for Supercoach might be an issue. But like you said, he does reach a lot of contests, so I definitely see Thomas improving this year.
Somebody who used to be my favourite player in the AFL before he lost us the grand final by being an absolute dominant force on the ground, and that's Luke Hodge. Last year he'd been hampered most of the year by injuries, and he didn't get a good run into the season and never really consolidated on some solid form. And even considering that, he still managed quite a decent Supercoach average, and a lot of it brought down by two particularly poor games against Cameron Ling, who's no longer in the competition. He's always been his bogey. So I think all good news on the Hodge front. We've seen what he's capable of. He's a 120 plus average type player. The main concern would be his injury history. So he does tend to get those soft tissue injuries, the groins, the quads, the calves, the hamstrings, the lot. That's a major concern. But I mean, considering what he's priced at, 570,000, and the fact that he's can quite comfortably average 120 plus, he becomes a reasonably good option to take into the season.
Hawthorn will win the premiership this year, so in that sense, you'd think it'd be a good pick if he plays 22. Hodgie was also one of my favourite players, just has a huge scoring potential, definitely underpriced at 106. Durability is probably the main thing that would lead me away from him, but yeah, he's a ripper, so definitely a good pick, I think.
Joe Watson's your club captain. Mark, how do you feel about his fantasy prospects this year?
Very good, actually. Essendon have a pretty soft first 10 or 11 weeks, so hopefully we can be in a good position on the ladder by then. Joe showed in the NAB games that he played that he is still going to be our dominant possession winner. He's probably going to get a bit more help in the midfield this year. Again, like Hodgie, sort of the biggest concern on him would be injury-wise. Last year, I think he averaged 120 up to when he did his hamstring, and then struggled from then on. I think he could easily average 115 plus for a season, very easily, especially if Essendon do well. So if you can avoid the injury and you pick Watson, I think he'll be a very, very good pick this year.
I probably see him similarly to Hodge and how they're positioned as fantasy picks this year. So I like it as well. Bryce Gibbs is the last premium that we're going to look at in the midfield. How do you feel about his prospects, Mark? He's been talked up so much by Brett Ratten. I'm afraid that he's not going to live up to expectations.
Yeah, I know, especially in sort of January, the amount of times that we saw Bryce Gibbs' name in the newspaper, it was quite a lot. So I'm a huge rep for Bryce Gibbs, and I just think that at some stage he's going to break out with scoring. I think he's out of contract this year. GWS are chasing him. He's averaged 107, 104, and 103 the last 3 years. Last season, he started playing out of defense a lot. Then he was moved to midfield forward. And once he was moved to midfield forward, he actually averaged 110 for the last, I think it was about 12 weeks. So that's some exposed form that you would expect him to at least replicate that. He's shown enough in the NAB without being completely dominating. Probably the one knock would be that Carlton has so many injuries up back at the moment that he may actually be required to play a bit more up there, which might affect his scoring. But I think Bryce is in for a big year. I think that the hype is probably going to turn out true and that he'll end up being quite a good scorer this year. And if he averages 115, then that's a ripping pick for your midfield.
I think that covers all the players that we want to talk about. I think it might be a pretty fun exercise, though, to finish the podcast, maybe. Bar Ablett and Selwood, let's go top four for the midfield.
Bar Ablett and Selwood.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go with Watson, Murphy, Thomas, and Hodge. Oh, sorry. Pendles obviously has to be in there. Sorry. So Pendles instead of Hodge.
Yeah. And this is obviously taking price into consideration as well. I'm going to go with Hodge, Thomas, Swallow, Watson would be my four.
So still a fair bit of disagreement between us. So it'll be interesting to see whether that third or fourth midfield positions actually make any difference this year, because with projections, they all could come out fairly even in the end anyway.
So that wraps up our preseason coverage. I think we've pumped out 8 episodes so far this preseason, and this one's been a particularly long one as well. So that's a lot of content.
That does seem like a lot of content.
Jaws a bit sore.
It's getting a little bit scary that we're going to be locked in and we're going to have to take the scores of the people we're picking, but I'm ready for lockout. It's been quite involved and long preseason, so yep, I'm ready to go. Bring on the footy. I'll be at the game on Saturday night between Essendon and North, and I'm very excited.
Yep, and I'm planning on hitting up Thursday and Friday night as well. Should be really ripper games, Carlton, Richmond, and Hawthorn, Collingwood to kick off the season proper. Last week wasn't quite as exciting viewing as I'd hoped for, but although GWS did perform above expectations, still good to see two competitive teams going at it. So I'm looking
and there's some really good games this weekend, starting on Thursday with Richmond Carlton. So yeah, it should be a really exciting week. If you do need any final lockout advice, you can try messaging me on Twitter at FBDonkey or head into the forums. It's going to be pretty crazy heading into lockout though.
Yeah, and don't forget our social media platforms, facebook.com/yoursupercoachcoach, and my Twitter hashtag is @your_sc_coach. Hopefully, we don't get Supercoach crashing again, because it didn't hold up before GWS and Sydney.
No, it didn't, and meant that I ended up with Sheil on the field, who was subbed out for 34 or something, so already got burnt.
Good luck for the start of the season, guys, and hopefully lockout doesn't get you. See ya.
See ya.